Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. This is Shane Vanderhart, and welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and happy 4th. I hope you're going to have a great weekend this weekend, and hopefully have spent a lot of time outdoors. I haven't checked the weather, so I'm hoping everything will be all right. But we have a special guest on the line, and unfortunately, Brian's not here to join us, so it'll be just the guest and myself. We have Governor Mike Huckabee, a former governor of Arkansas and the 2016 presidential candidate. And as many of you probably remember, he also was the 2008 Iowa caucus winner, and I actually personally endorsed him in 2008. So welcome, Governor Huckabee.
Shane, it's great to be back with you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, I'm glad you could join us. And first question is, What are your plans for 4th of July?
Well, I'll actually spend that day at home. It'll be the first in about 8 or 9 days that I'll be able to do it. I have to leave the next day. But, I feel like every now and then you just have to get away, get your clothes washed. And So I'll enjoy some fireworks, some barbecue, and just a great reminder of America's 239th birthday.
What are some Huckabee family traditions?
Well, usually it involves smoking some ribs and using one of my favorite rub recipes and, just enjoying the sights of the fireworks, and we'll see what happens. I don't shoot off fireworks because I feel like somebody else will pay for those, and I'll just enjoy watching them.
Great. We obviously had a couple big, Supreme Court decisions come down last week, and Chief Justice Roberts said in his dissent in the marriage decision that the ruling had nothing to do with the Constitution. And I was wondered why he didn't apply that logic to his first ruling on Obamacare. But I was curious, do you agree with him? Did this ruling have anything to do with the Constitution at all?
None whatsoever. And I read the entire 103-page report. The position that Kennedy took really reached out into thin air and created a constitutional right that simply doesn't exist. He used words like spirituality and intimacy. Well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that a person has a right to spirituality and intimacy. Right. A person does have an unbridled right to religious liberty, but that is being subjugated to this new redefinition of marriage, which has no constitutional authority whatsoever.
I know something I've been hearing a lot, Governor, is when I talk about this ruling, they'll say, oh, how has this impacted you personally? Should that matter? How should we care about things that doesn't impact us personally? And or will it impact you personally?
Well, I think it'll impact everyone. When a child goes to school and the curriculum is changed to reflect the definition of marriage as being two men or two women, it's going to change whether or not you can just say to your child, here's what marriage means, without being called a bigot and a hater. When your church is told it's going to lose its tax-exempt status because it won't do a same-sex wedding. When Christian t-shirt makers, bakers, florists, wedding chapel operators are put out of business because they won't participate in a same-sex wedding and they have discrimination lawsuits filed against them. You have a case right here in Iowa, Shane, that's happened.
The Gortz house.
Odgard family.
Yeah.
And they've already been put out of business. They were fined $10,000. They ended up having to do a settlement of $5,000, all because that they said that they could not, in clear conscience, rent out their wedding chapel for a same-sex wedding ceremony. So we're already seeing the effects. And even if people were not being harassed out of business and being intimidated and discriminated against and being shown the highest levels of intolerance, to change the definition of marriage is to make a fundamental alteration of an institution that has existed virtually unscathed for 5,000 years. And that's a pretty serious leap for us to make in such a short period of time. with no real history as to what the long-term sociological impact will be.
Yeah, definitely. And you recently released some things that you would do on your first day in office should you be win the nomination and should you win the general election. On day one, what would President Huckabee do to address the religious liberty concerns that we have?
Well, Shane, there are three specific things that I've said that I would do. The first is that I would declare that it would be an executive order that would protect religious liberty for every individual, for every business, hospital, school, university, church, pastor, that no one would have their religious liberty infringed upon because of their deeply held faith beliefs. The second thing, I would instruct the Attorney General to vigorously defend anyone whose religious liberty was threatened because they refused to be a part of or participate in or endorse or somehow put a stamp of approval upon a ceremony that they could not approve because of their religious convictions. And the third thing, I would order the Secretary of Defense to make sure that every soldier, sailor, marine, airman, Coast Guardsman, and every chaplain were fully able to practice religious liberty in whatever way that their faith dictated to them, and that the chaplains would certainly be able to pray in Jesus' name, keep the Bible on their desk, counsel people according to their conscience, and not be subjected to a dismissal from the military because they happen to believe in the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God.
Just a question about the scope of these executive orders. Would these just impact your administration, or would they go down to even discrimination at the state level?
Well, each state would have to make their own decision, but what we would do is there would be no federal intervention to deny people their religious liberty, and we would vigorously defend them at any level because it would be, at that point, a federal law that imposed it. So by federal force, we would make sure that the Attorney General, the Department of Defense, and the executive branch and all of its agencies protected the religious liberties of people.
Well, we saw on display last week, words have no meaning. And we have, and this has obviously been coming to a head. We've had a judicial branch that's totally run amok. And we're developing really in this country a sense of we have an oligarchy rather than a third branch of the government. How would you address this runaway branch that we're seeing? And what can be done?
Well, the first thing the president can do is to simply say that while we appreciate the review and the decision of the courts, I shall await an action on the part of Congress, the people's elected representatives, who would have to provide enabling legislation that would then be signed by the president before any such ruling would be used in the force of law. This nonsense that the Supreme Court can just make a law comes from somewhere outside of the Constitution, because a cursory, simple civics class level reading of the Constitution makes it explicitly clear that the Supreme Court cannot make a law. And I hear people, some of them Ivy League law school graduates and candidates for president, say things like, well, that's it. It's the law of the land. The issue's settled. Let's move on. And I'm thinking, where do they get that notion that the Supreme Court is the supreme being? Where do they get the notion that the court can make a decision based on the ruling of five unelected black robe lawyers, vigorously opposed by the other four unelected black robe lawyers, and somehow we're supposed to bow and say that that's the final word and that no checks and balances exist against the Supreme Court and a runaway ruling?
Yeah, there's been some different ideas floated out there as far as how to address this. One idea was put forth by Senator Cruz about a retention election for Supreme Court justices and I suppose other federal judges. Is that something that you think would be a good idea or you would support?
I'm not opposed to that. I have long advocated, long before I became a candidate for president, but I've long advocated term limits for all members of the government in all three branches, executive, legislative, as well as the judicial. But let's face it, a retention is going to require a constitutional amendment.
Right.
And that's going to be a long time. I think one thing a president can do, and a presidential candidate should commit to do, is simply saying that he will treat this decision in the same way Abraham Lincoln treated the Dred Scott decision of 1857.
Right.
And will simply not put into effect that which is going against the expressed wishes of voters in over 30 states.
And, you know, we've also, like, for instance, have seen, I believe it's Mississippi saying, hey, we're not going to issue marriage licenses, which is an interesting way to deal with the situation. Is that, what are some ideas out there? Like, for instance, there's two different types of federal marriage amendments. Do you support just the overall federal marriage amendment that defines marriage as being between one man and one woman? Do you support the one that says, hey, just let's send it back to the states? All of the above, none of the above?
Well, I mean, let's take the language of the Constitution on its face. There's nothing in the Constitution about marriage. It's silent on the issue. There
right.
was a presumption that there would be no redefinition. I don't think the founders ever envisioned a time when people would say, yeah, let's make it so that men would marry men and women would marry women. That would be beyond the imagination of our founders. So they never wrote anything in there about it, not thinking they needed to. So if it's going to be regulated, it should be at the state level. But I would also go further in saying that no matter how a court might rule and even how a Congress might act, man doesn't get to redefine marriage any more than man can redefine the laws of gravity.
Right.
We can resist them all we want, but we're still going to come crashing down if we jump off a building.
The next president should have the opportunity to appoint, you know, one to maybe even hurt up to three judges. What would be your criteria for judicial nominations?
I'd want to make sure that they had passed high school civics, for one. And secondly, I would want to make sure that they had actually read the Constitution and that their understanding of it came from the reading of the text itself and not from an Ivy League law degree that had somehow caused them to be in confusion as to the equality of the three branches of government and to the checks and balances that exist in our form of government. The next thing I'd want to make sure of is that they had a clear understanding that they did not have the power or authority to make law, only to review it and to make recommendations as to what the Constitution actually says. But it is not their purview to correct Congress, to bail Congress out, are to create some type of new civil right based on polling and cultural worldview.
Great. One follow-up question regarding that. Would you look for a judicial candidate who has a breadth of experience, has written a lot of opinions? Because it seems like judicial nominations from Republicans anyway seem to be light on experience, and there's not a whole lot to go off of.
Yeah, I mean, it's helpful, certainly, if a person has had appellate court experience. But I think more importantly than whether they've written some opinions is whether or not the opinions they write clearly reflect their commitment to that fundamental constitutional understanding of the role and the limitation of the role of the judicial branch. If someone did not have that clear understanding, I don't care what they had written, they would not be on my short list for nomination.
Okay, I want to shift gears to with the time we've got left. By the way, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Governor Mike Huckabee. Education has been kind of a wedge issue, I think, in this primary process. And I just have a question for you regarding Race to the Top. In your book, Simple Government, you wrote that you fully endorsed the new federal program, Race to the Top. And I was just curious, is that something that you still support, or is that something that you would support as president?
Well, like Common Core, it's been hijacked into something that has become unsupportable. When I wrote that back in 2000, and I think it was 2010, 2011, Race to the Top at that point was rewards for schools that were doing exceptional jobs. It was really helping schools competitively to make sure that they were putting students first. What it's now become, when it was tied by the Department of Education to adherence to Common Core, and then Common Core became something totally off the wall and got into areas of curriculum, expanded standards beyond the math and language arts that it was originally intended to be, and then they tied the funding, it really soured and ruined any correlation between the two, and therefore poisoned the notion of race to the top funds being something of a reward for schools doing a good job, and instead becoming rewards for schools who are doing the bidding of the federal government. I can't support that.
All right. We don't have much time left, so I don't want to get too deep into another question. I just some quick follow-up questions, just totally off the off this topic. For instance, Iowa State. Do you have a favorite? I'm going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, I say Arkansas.
Answer right now.
And go Hogs.
All right. Good. Favorite coffee drink?
The darkest, boldest version of Starbucks is my favorite. Oh. I like it very, very strong.
You are a man after my own heart. Good answer. And what's your favorite Bible verse?
Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's been my favorite verse since I was 15 years old.
Great. And just the remaining time, why should we caucus for you?
Well, I think we can't afford to send someone to the presidency that has never governed, doesn't have the experience in the left seat flying through the storms. And I think extensive executive experience that was also experienced in the midst of a very challenging partisan environment and beating the Clinton machine. There's only one candidate who meets all those criteria, and you're talking to it.
All right. Thank you, Governor Huckabee. This is Caffeinated Thoughts. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
You in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance
you need.
And welcome to the studio, Brian. Brian missed our interview with Mike Huckabee, but he is here with us now. And
is that a good thing?
And he missed last week, but we're glad to
That's
have you back.
That's probably a good thing, too.
Oh, I missed you, man. But we had a good talk with Ben Carson last week. But
I listened
to
it.
Up to?
I was on vacation last week.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, buddy. I don't know what it is or either normally, but no, the whole family went out to the Black Hills.
Cool.
So I was actually enjoying, I think, the Rapid City area.
So you saw Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I think that's roughly where
Obama
I was.
Has Obama chiseled himself in there yet? No.
There's probably an executive order to that effect.
Probably. So anyway, good to have you back in
the thing of it is, I was gone on a week that happened to be perhaps the heaviest news week.
You did.
In about a decade.
You really pick them right.
I missed two SCOTUS, major SCOTUS decisions, and then all that flap about the Confederate flag. And all, I mean, it was just a big news week, and you know, I was out enjoying the country, but anyway.
You were out living life, which most of us should be doing instead of paying attention to, you know, news constantly and politics.
Speaking of which.
Hey, we have, speaking of which, that was an interesting segue. We on the line, we have a special guest, Drew Klein. He's with Americans for Prosperity, and he's the state director in Iowa. And then also in studio, we have Jeff Patch, who's the communications director for Americans for Prosperity in Iowa. So hi, Jeff.
Hey, Shane. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Hey, Drew.
Hey, thank you guys.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Yes. Yeah, so I just wanted to, you guys, I see Jeff around and about, and I know you guys are kind of gearing up to 2016, even though you're not necessarily injecting into the race, but you're injecting maybe your issues into the race. What's going on for 2016 with you guys? What are you up to?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, really our kind of our strategy has really already begun, and it's not simply about 2016, but 2015 as well. And as an organization, we try to keep things focused, you know, primarily on the policies and the issues that, you know, that are actually going to change people's lives. You know, I think it's important to realize that regardless of what happens in an election, you know, the American people, their lives don't change based on what happens in an election. They change based on what happens in the legislative sessions that follow. So, you know, that's really continues to be our focus. But the Iowa caucuses really present a good opportunity for our members here in Iowa and really even across the country to engage in a way that really brings those issues to the forefront as well, both at the Iowa, you know, level to talk about what's needed at the state legislative level, as well as, you know, bringing up some big federal issues that need to be addressed and need to be taken care of. And I say big federal issues, and I think we should explain that the reason that I say big federal issues is because they're big now, but the idea is that we should be breaking those up and sending those back out to the states.
Right.
But, you know, really, really taking hold of the federalism that our founders gave us.
So for some of our listeners who may not be aware of Americans for Prosperity, what are some of the issues that you guys focus on at the state level and then at the federal level?
Yeah, well, we are, you know, at our core, we are a free market advocacy group. So we advocate for limited government, lower taxes, less regulation. At the federal level, kind of the big three areas that we engage in are taxes and spending, regulation, and then healthcare as well, which has, you know, been an issue now for, well, really going back into the mid-90s when we had the near miss on Hillary Care, and that was then just kind of modernized and has come to us now in the form of Obamacare or the American Affordable Care Act, if we can continue to call it that.
I have a hard time calling it that without quotes around it anyway. So there was also something, a piece of news that a lot of people aren't aware of, but the Export-Import Bank was not reauthorized, and a lot of people, I see a lot of people making a big deal out of that, but first of all, a lot of our listeners, and I have to admit myself as well, don't really understand what the Export-Import Bank is. Sure. Can you explain what it is and why was it important that it wasn't reauthorized?
Yeah, so this is an institution that's been a part of the federal government, you know, dating all the way back to FDR and kind of the New Deal policies that he implemented. So it is at its core and from its beginning just an overreach of federal government. And the way that it's worked is that the federal government has set up and has started to offer loans or subsidies to, you know, try to ensure that U.S. goods can be exported abroad to prop up, you know, some of the industries here in the U.S. that we want to make sure are competitive around the world. That's at its core, that's kind of the way that it was structured. What has happened with it over time, like anything else, is that special interests have found a way to take advantage of that. And so what you end up seeing is that rather than abiding by its charter and really being about supporting some of our smaller businesses, you know, last year, for example, some upwards of 75% of it went to one company. 75% of all of the funding out of the Export-Import Bank went to just one company. Here in Iowa, we see, you know, the U.S. Chamber right now running ads talking about how vital it is that we reauthorize the Export-Import Bank. But 99.7% of the exports that come out of the state of Iowa receive zero funding from the Export-Import Bank.
You know,
and so what it's really become is just a bank for the politically connected.
Right. I call the chamber anymore a frenemy because there were a lot of things I supported them on, but man, there's a lot of issues that they've just completely gone south on too.
Yeah, I agree. It seems to be a different chamber than it used to be.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, you know, whether we talk about the direct engagement of the chamber or just the Export-Import Bank as a whole, it seems to be kind of the epitome of the cronyism that we decry in every election cycle. And then, you know, again, dating back to the 1930s, it just keeps on getting reauthorized, though. So we're ecstatic to see that it has finally expired. It didn't, of course, just shut its doors. There are, you know, some programs that will continue into the future here. But what it does mean is that no new financing will be offered out of that bank.
Great. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Drew Klein with Americans for Prosperity, and studio Jeff Patch, who has been our silent partner in the studio today. Hi, Jeff. Just got to get you on there once.
Thanks, Shane.
You're welcome. I didn't want to feel left out. So, Drew, who supported, as far as the Iowa congressional delegation, who supported the reauthorization for Export-Import Bank, and who was against it?
Yeah, we were actually, very excited. It did break on party lines. So of the four congressional districts here in Iowa, you had all three Republicans that, that are on record as opposing it. And you have Dave Loebsack in Iowa's second congressional district, who said he would support it. Now, I make that clear. There were no votes to reauthorize it. It simply
They just let it die.
Faded into death, which is, that's perfectly okay as well.
There's other bills other programs I'd like to see that happen too.
But we do, we do keep track of that because we know that there will likely be a move to kind of revive it or reauthorize the bank as well. On the opposite kind of side of the Capitol there in D.C. in the Senate, right now, kind of where we see people as far as where they're at on the record from the Iowa delegation, it looks like Charles Grassley is opposed to it.
Okay.
Senator Ernst has definitely indicated that she would be supportive of reauthorizing it. So,
Chamber's been whispering in her ear.
Yeah, still some work to do there, but we're hopeful that with kind of the fading and the lapse of authorization that we can prevent it from coming up again. What we do know, though, is the supporters of that bank are likely to try to attach it to what they would call a must-pass bill. So they'll try to attach it to the highway bill or something else that, that likely is going to receive wide
support. We don't need highways.
Hey, Drew, earlier you were talking about some of the things that Americans for Prosperity were working towards and working against in some cases. And I wondered what you think about the electorate as it is currently. I was thinking about this morning. It seems to me that we've certainly seen a shift over the last decade or so, it appears, with respect to what the electorate thinks about such things as collectivism and statism. And there certainly seems to be a healthy percentage of the population that's quite happy to march towards what we might call a social democracy. And thus we have a lot of sympathy in some quarters for Obamacare and so on and so forth. So what's your take on where the electorate is at? Do you guys think you have a tall order to do some of the things that you've set out to do?
Yeah, I think there's always a battle that's raging that largely remains kind of unseen, and I think that's the cultural battle that you're kind of hinting at. This idea of which direction as a country are we going to go culturally? What do we want out of our government? And in our worldview, we think that government should exist to perform some basic and limited core functions, and then it should give us the freedom to kind of handle all of those other issues. But more and more, we've seen the left become very efficient at and very effective at talking about some of these big programs in a kind of an emotional way that makes them seem as though if we don't do this, that people are going to die and all of these issues. The problem with that is that history bears out almost the exact opposite. History bears out that freedom is actually what's led to the greatest advancements in human history. And so the prosperity that we experience here in the U.S. is largely based, even if you go back to the colonies, on the fact that they decided to reject collectivism and instead move towards more of an individualistic kind of approach to government. And all of that is kind of centered around free market economics and that evil word capitalism.
Yeah. Oh, capitalism got chills down my spine. We happen to love capitalism here at Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. Just kidding, everybody.
I think it's important that we understand, kind of what that means, because the problem with collectivism is that you ultimately end up with kind of this limited number of powerful people making decisions for everybody else. And that's not really, I don't think, when we think about the phrase pursuit of happiness, I don't think that is achieved.
But Drew,
only a few people make those choices.
But Drew, we already kind of have that going on. We've got nine black robe tyrants who pass SCOTUS care.
Yeah, it is.
Or at least five of them.
Kind of shifting towards even talking about the court, I think it's important that conservatives and free market advocates begin to realize that the court is not going to save our bacon. They're not going to save us from kind of the disastrous administration that we have right now. And I don't think we should count on them saving us from disastrous administrations that might come in the future.
Yeah, not if they have a block of judges that are going to just fix laws that they like, that they don't want to deem unconstitutional.
It does seem to me that we really do have an uphill battle here. When you stop and think about it, the left has the courts.
Right.
The left has academia.
Right.
The left has the media.
You're making me depressed, Brian.
Just saying. We got to have a realistic view of what we're up against.
And change is not going to happen overnight. At least not the good kind of change.
I think that's a key phrase as well. Change is not going to happen overnight. We didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to fix these problems overnight either. And so, groups like ours, groups like Americans for Prosperity, we have really a long-term vision and a long-term mission to kind of rebuild that culture and to kind of move people back in that direction, that they understand the value that free markets and freedom in general brings to people's lives. And like I said, that's not a 15 issue. That's not a 16 issue. That's really thinking long term. What does the country look like in 2020, 2025, 2030?
Right.
And how do we continue to just kind of march and advance the cause that direction?
Right. But
that's really how the left has gotten us to where we are today.
But we do need to elect the right people too. And don't just say, well, you elect the so-and-so because we need a majority of Republicans. Because obviously that hasn't always helped.
That doesn't do you a lot of good.
So, thank you, Drew, for coming
on.
And thanks, Jeff. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
You and your spouse are like two chemicals that become combustible when mixed. Your actions and reactions just tend to set each other off. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Early in your marriage, the differences brought fireworks that brought spark and energy to your lives. But the addition of busyness and bitterness have created a concoction that simply explodes and rocks the foundation of your marriage. Understanding how you and your spouse respond when threatened can bring stability to your volatile mixture. One tendency is to become aggressive and to push for solution. We call them attackers. The other is to run from potential conflict. We call them escapers. Two attackers have quick combustion, but the smoke clears quickly. But if you have an attacker and an escaper, the explosion takes longer, but the fallout can be more devastating. For healthy chemistry with your spouse, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or check out crosswalkcounseling.org. And we have entered our time where we do our news rundown. And I missed doing this with Brian last week, but
We've got some interesting news.
Yeah.
Jim Webb
is running for president.
And he's the former Democratic senator from Virginia. And he's an interesting character because he was one of the senators that actually kind of got busted for bringing in carries. You know, he's got a carry permit.
He had some hardware with him.
Had some hardware. And, you know, Washington, D.C. at the time was pretty, you know, they had really, really, really strict gun control laws. And I'm pretty sure he didn't have a permit to carry in D.C. anyway. But who's gonna frisk a U.S. senator?
I don't know. They did that to Ron Paul in the airport.
That's true.
Anyway, no, Jim Webb carrying around the Capitol. That's pretty interesting.
So,
Vietnam vet, by the way.
Yeah, I kind of like him for that. But he also is an author and a filmmaker. And he's going to be, I believe, the national security hawk of the Democratic presidential field. It certainly won't be Bernie Sanders.
No, you know, we were talking about this earlier. I think this is such an interesting grouping now
right.
on the Democrat side where we've got, on the left, we've got Bernie Sanders. We've got Hillary allegedly in the middle.
Yeah.
When I say middle.
You know, she's tacking left just to try to compete because Bernie Sanders is dragging her to the left.
Right. And then we have a genuine moderate, I think.
Yes.
In Jim Webb.
I think that's a fair label for Jim Webb. And he said some interesting things. For instance, he said that he would not be the president to sign an executive order establishing a long-term relationship with Iran if it accepts Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons. This administration, those in Congress, he said, should be looking very hard at the actual terms of this agreement, which we on the outside cannot yet see or evaluate. They should also be questioning whether it is appropriate for such an important agreement to be signed without the specific prior approval of Congress.
I like that, too.
Hello, common sense.
Yeah.
Iran shouldn't have nukes. I wish you'd hear more, you know, more Democrats criticize Obama over that. Then he also criticized the use of military force in Libya. He also called Benghazi an eventuality because of the chaos that ensued with Gaddafi's reign ending, which, I agree to a point. I think there were a lot of things that obviously should have been done but pre-Benghazi to protect our folks on the ground there. But it was, you know, once Gaddafi fell, that was like they should have actually pulled everybody at that point.
Well, look, I've said this before, the thing about Benghazi, I'm not going to be highly critical about what they did or they didn't do relative to the attack before,
right.
before, during, or even after. What upsets me is that they just blatantly lied to us after the fact about it because it did not fit their narrative. Their narrative was
right.
Bin Laden was dead, the war on terror is over, and so this stupid YouTube video gets blamed for the Benghazi attack.
Yeah.
That was not an eventuality.
Right. Very, very true. So he's kind of glossing over that. He also criticized the president on his handling of China. He says, I've been warning for many years that the United States is the essential guarantor of the stability in the East and Southeast Asia, and that China's increasingly aggressive military posture in that region threatens our own national security. If I'm elected as your president, I can promise you that we will not accept China's continuing military expansion and intimidation in such areas as the South China Sea, nor will we be so fearful of our economic reliance on trade with China that we fail to protect our citizens in such matters as cybersecurity, where it is becoming increasingly apparent that the personal information of millions of Americans have been penetrated and breached, apparently, by Chinese intelligence agencies. Wow.
Yeah.
And this is a Democrat?
And meanwhile, the Chinese, of course, are denying up and down that they
right.
had anything to do with it.
Right, yeah. In the meantime, President Obama calls a GO primary. He says, like Hunger Games. He said, I've lost count how many Republicans are running for this job, he said during a speech in La Crosse, Wisconsin. They'll have enough for an actual Hunger Games. You know what? I kind of agree with him there. the number of candidates.
And any one of them, including Donald Trump, would do a better job than this guy.
Right, right.
Who is he kidding? Man, the guy has hubris. I'll just say it that way.
Right. But I have to agree the number of candidates is starting. And because it basically our 14th major one entered the race, but really there's probably closer to 30 when you consider some of the minor candidates.
Oh my.
It's ridiculous. Speaking of Trump, why is Trump polling so well? A CNN ORC poll
released Wednesday showed Trump had 12% of the vote among Republicans and Republican leaners. Second, and this is national polls, which I generally take with a grain of salt. Second only to former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who earned 19%.
We were going to call it the Q poll.
The Q poll, yeah. Yes. Which was also out Wednesday, revealed that Trump was also tied for second with Dr. Ben Carson among likely Republican caucus voters in Iowa. Carson and Trump each had 10% of the vote. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker led the pack with 18%. But also, you know, just to keep things in perspective here, his Real Clear Politics average is 6%, which is seventh place nationally. Look at New Hampshire, though. His Real Clear Politics average is 10%. He's third on average in their polls. But the last two polls done in New Hampshire, he's in second place. So there's something real here. And why is he polling so high? He's not a politician. And I think people like just the man who will say it like as he sees it. Yeah. I don't want to say it as it is.
No, but you're exactly
sometimes
right.
His perspective is a little skewed.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You're exactly right. He's saying what a lot of people think.
Right.
Okay? And he's not afraid to say it because he doesn't care what the fallout is.
And frankly, you know, I would not have said what he had to say about Mexican immigrants.
I wouldn't have framed it that way.
Definitely wouldn't have framed it that way. However, there was, Rich Lowry of National Review said there's an element of truth to what
sure.
he said.
One of the things that he pointed out was what a disaster the border is.
Right.
Why is that a controversial
right.
part of the equation?
But honestly, you know, NBC News, or NBC polling contract and Macy's and all this blowing up, I think this actually helps him. Well, I think more people be endeared to him.
I think it does help him. You're right. And you know this, Shane, for me personally, I hope he stays in just because the guy's so hilarious. And,
right.
and for me, I'm nostalgic here. I feel like I'm watching Ross Perot in 1992.
Right.
You know?
Well, the way he's pulling, he's going to be in debates for sure. And that'll be interesting. But here's the thing. He's been drawing crowds in Iowa. There were 280 people that went to his stop in Madison County, which I think is a record for a Madison County stop. His first visit to Des Moines after announcing his presidential campaign, close to 1,000 people packed in the Hoyt Sherman place to hear him speak. He had 400 people come see him up in Mason City, which I know is a record. And talking with Chuck Laudner, who's his Iowa guy here, Chuck said, you know, I'm from this area in Mason City. I was seeing people I normally don't see at campaign events, which means that, you know, he might have the ability to bring some people into the party. Anyway,
well, he's been saying some things that resonate with people,
right,
clearly.
Right, and I think the thing to, you know, keep and bear in mind is candidates, especially if I were advising candidates, do not blow this man off.
I would love to see Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump go after each other.
Oh,
that'd
gosh,
kind of
that'd be humorous. But this Trump could end up surprising some people. He really could. And some people might be excited about that. Some people might be scared to death about that. But those are the facts. The man he's spending money in Iowa. He's organized. You're not going to be able to outspend Donald Trump.
Right.
But he's got staff in Iowa, and he's got a pretty good staffer in Chuck Laudner. He could end up making some, you know, gains here on the ground.
I know I have a perverse motivation, but I'm actually glad that he's doing so well. I want him to stay in.
Yeah. Anyway, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Go, Trump, go. We'll be back. We'll be back in a bit.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, Call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodman. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodman. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We wanted to touch on one story that we didn't get to last segment. Montana man requests right to marry two wives. And we told you so, that this was going to happen after Supreme Court ruling. He said he was inspired, Anthony Collier was inspired by the recent Supreme Court decision that made marriage equal. He said he was particularly struck by the words of dissenting Chief Justice John Roberts, who claimed giving gay couples the right to marry might inspire polygamy.
He got inspired by that, huh?
Yeah, I don't think Roberts necessarily intended for that to inspire anybody to get an idea.
Oh,
anyway,
my.
But moving on, not much more we could say about this other than I don't think
actually
it'll be
we could say
we
more
could
about
say
that.
A lot more about it. And I don't think this will be the last time we hear about this issue.
You're exactly right. Okay, and now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
Okay, this story's out of North Dakota. The newspaper is, let's see here, Fargo-Moorhead, the Forum. Yeah, the Forum of Fargo-Moorhead. They ran certainly one of the most shortest obituaries ever published, accompanying a photograph and a name of a local resident, Douglas Legler, maybe? Legler? Douglas somebody.
Legler.
Yeah. The obit, which ran Wednesday, had just two simple words, quote, Doug died, unquote. His daughter, Janet Stoll, says that her father had long insisted on a short and sweet death notice. Well, I guess they gave him that. Oh, she added that her dad, who died on June 27th at the age of 85, was very lighthearted and had a great sense of humor. Similarly, in 2014, a concise obituary like this made the news. The local reported last April that a Swedish man named Stig Kernell had given strict instructions as to what his obituary would say. And upon his death, a local newspaper ran the obit, quote, I am dead, unquote.
Oh, man.
I am dead.
Well, I'm glad that's how you want people to remember you. Doug.
Oh, my.
Doug died.
Doug died. Okay.
Wow.
Hey, we're going to do this. Go ahead.
I think, you know, I'd tell my wife, you can afford a couple of paragraphs for me. I'd be okay with that.
Just a couple, though, right?
Just a couple.
Yeah.
No more.
All right. Well, we're going to do something different. I got thinking about this the other day. Every week I do the research for this segment.
You can call that research?
In a manner of speaking.
Okay.
There's a handful.
I call it trolling.
There's a handful of ridiculous websites that I go to, but... But for this segment, the You Can't Make This Stuff Up segment, I thought to myself, you know what? This is getting more difficult to find the really good stuff. So why don't we employ the help of our listeners?
If you troll the interwebs like Brian, you can send
troll
us...
Troll the interwebs? I can barely turn on my computer, buddy. You know that because you're my IT guy.
Well, you don't have to have, you know, savvy, you know, tech ability to troll. It's basically just, you know, go to random websites.
All right.
That's
well,
what trolling means.
Anyway, we're gonna enlist the help of our listeners. We would like you to submit suggestions for this particular segment. If you've got a good, funny story, send it to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. And we will give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. So let's keep those emails coming in with those great ideas for this illustrious segment.
Yes. We want to continue the proud tradition of you can't make this stuff up. And again, it's story@caffeinatedthoughts.com.
Yeah, and you can put something down besides I am dead.
Yeah.
You can be more verbose than that.
But it has to be real news. That's the thing.
Well, that's right. You can't make it up.
Don't
and then
send
it
us
in.
A story. We don't want to read your short fiction. No, it's got weird news, wonky
funny
news,
funny news,
funny news.
All right,
nothing disgusting. Stuff we have to be able to put on the air.
Yes.
Anyway, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
See everybody.